AM 950, Matt McNeil here. I am very happy to welcome in Carolyn Holbrook. The book is Tell Me Your Names and I Will Testify, Essays. It is out right now, and it's a series of essays where Carolyn talks about her life and moments in her life and kind of the insight and the addressing of the past selves that we do have. She's kind enough to join us today to talk about the book. Carolyn, thank you very much, and congratulations on the new book.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me, Matt.
My absolute pleasure. I'm going to read your – because you're over at Hamline University as well. I want to read your bio from Hamline, which is fantastic. Carolyn Holbrook is an adjunct professor of creative writing at Hamline University's College of Liberal Arts Creative Writing Programs. She's a writer, educator, and a longtime advocate for the healing power of the arts. Her passion for providing grassroots accessibility to the literary arts inspired her to create – SASE, The Right Place, in 1993, and to lead it as its artistic executive director up until, I believe, it merged with Intermedia Arts. And was that 2006?
Yes.
And 2006. The healing power of the arts. I am a person myself who could not agree with that statement more, that the arts are such a necessity to have within a society because it allows people to find relief, solace from their lives. Talk a little bit about that and how you got to the point where you're such an advocate for it on that level.
Well, I grew up in a family of artists of various types. My stepfather was a jazz musician, but his day job was he was the first black auditor for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, but it was the music that kept him alive. And, my brother played music and wrote poetry. My mother and my sister both were, they designed clothes, and I wrote. And so, I mean, I'm just very much believe that, the arts do heal. And I think that's been proven throughout history. The arts are always at the forefront of change. And in the times that we're living in right now, you know that we deeply need this type of self-expression, mm-hmm. whether it's writing or cooking or, whatever type of art that you do or that you love or that your children tend to do. So, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask because I think there is a very interesting time. I mean, like I said, all times are precedented. So, it's kind of foolish, I think, to say, this time is different from this time. We all change. We are living in a very unique time for sure. Mm-hmm. I remember in 2016, my oldest daughter coming home from sixth grade at that point in tears because, well, frankly, everyone thought that their friends were about to get deported because of Trump being elected. And now here we are in what is one of the most, societal cataclysmic years of all time, a massive pandemic, economic crisis. We have the racial injustice being exposed and finally being seen by a lot of people. Let's be honest about that. Yep. And the undeniable and understandable frustration of the minority community boiling over into this, we are just not going to take it anymore. Mm-hmm. Standard. I mean, I think that it's going to be fascinating. I'm going to be fascinated to see how the arts are transformed through this period. It's one of those things but I see it with my kids for sure. The young generation definitely seems to be impacted and are bringing the arts in as a way to cope.
Yes, agreed. Totally. Mm. Yeah. In fact, I mean, you see it all over the George Floyd Memorial.
Yeah.
You see. Yeah. And yeah, people are we're just done. I have my organization that I run right now is called More Than a Single Story. I don't know why that didn't get into my bio, but I've been doing it for 5 years. And what it is we're bringing people from the communities of color and indigenous communities together to talk about issues of importance to us. Mm-hmm. And these are artists and activists, and they're writing and they're painting and they're talking about the impact of these times in their lives and the lives of their family, just like you're doing. Mm-hmm. And yes, these times are unprecedented, and it's just right now we're putting together an anthology of the first 5 years of More Than a Single Story, in which, new writers as well as seasoned writers are submitting work that's just, spilling it out.
Mm-hmm. I do want to make sure I say this. The University of Minnesota press bio indeed does mention more than a single story. I apologize myself for not bringing that up. I was reading off your Hamline University bio earlier. But when you look at this and you see the arts, I mean, you yourself, I mean, you're on the forefront of this. You've got to be seeing the impact in the way that artists are changing and the writing is changing through these times.
Indeed, people are, you know, as I said, they're just no holds barred now. You're just diving right in. Because, you know, I think a lot of times we tend to take a while to go deep into the issues as artists. And sometimes we sort of skirt around them because it's hard to go there, for one thing. But it's also, you know, could be an issue of, you know, what kind of impact would this have on my daily life? But, you know, we don't have the time right now to worry about that. I mean, we are in critical times. And, you know, as artists, we got to go there.
I think, I was going to just say, and I think as you're implying there, just in making sure, especially the younger kids, knowing the arts are there, that is such a valuable, important element of our lives right now.
Yeah, and as we know, you know, that the individual that occupies the White House would like nothing more than to get rid of the arts and the media, the things that that we need so desperately. We can't let that happen.
No, you and I are on the same boat there for sure, 100%. Your story, your latest book here is something I think a lot of people can on one level relate to. We all have changed. I'm 52 right now. I can't tell you how many different phases in my life I've had. You know, and you look back on them, and obviously, yes, some were better, some were worse. For yourself, with the book, Tell Me Your Names and I Will Testify. Essays here. You yourself looked back on your life, found these stories that were there at different stages of your life. Talk a little bit about, I mean, were those always at the top of your mind in regards to wanting to write about them, or were they, as you went back and had a retrospective, you realized, oh, well, there's still a lot of unanswered questions or unanswered emotions I haven't dealt with this?
My oldest son is about your age. And I've been working on these essays since he was a teenager. And, you know, as a way of keeping me sane, because art does keep you sane. And, you know, I just kept them. I held on to them and I just kept writing and, you know, thinking. And then when, you know, when we started working on the book, on the manuscript as an actual book, my editor at the University of Minnesota Press and I talked about, you know, what could be the format? And we decided, you know, let's just keep it as it is, essays. And so I had to go back and look at some of the older ones and consider, how do I view this topic now, 30 some years later, 10 years later, 5 years later? So there's a lot of then and now stuff going on in the book, you know? And it's just been a fascinating process for me to go back and, you know, sort of do a retrospective on what I was thinking and feeling, you know, during the time that I was writing, you know, any particular essay that's in the book. And the title comes from a poem by Lucille Clifton. I don't know if you're familiar with Lucille Clifton. She passed away a few years ago. She was just a profoundly amazing poet. And one of her poems is called At the Cemetery, Walnut Grove Plantation, South Carolina, 1989. Here she is walking through a cemetery on a plantation, and she's taking note of things, and she says, "Nobody mentions slaves, and yet the curious tools shine with your fingerprints. Nobody mentions slaves, but somebody did this work who had no guide, no stone, who molders under rock. Tell me your names. Tell me your bashful names, and I will testify." And, you know, for me, that says so much. Because, I mean, she, as an artist, is going way back and looking at this old stuff and noticing that her people are not named and saying, oh, yeah, you know, we have to do something about this. And that's kind of how I'm feeling as well. So, you know, in my book, I do feel like I'm, you know, sort of testifying for myself, my family, my children, my people, and just adding my voice to the conversation that is getting louder and louder and more necessary.
the design.
I hope that made sense.
Oh no, God, my God, did that make an insane amount of sense? Because I mean, let's face it. I mean, I've been spending some time in South Carolina the last few years myself, and I know exactly what what she's saying. I mean, you see the scars of slavery still very visible within the South, but here in Minnesota, we have this novel belief, this wrong feeling that things don't exist here. But the reality is the desire to keep the specifically the minority communities, whether it's African American, Native American, Latino, anonymity, having them, you know, sure, you exist, but we don't really want to know the story. That is definitively a byline of Minnesota, that you can be here. If you're Finnish, we love it. If you're German, we love it. But it's kind of one of those things where there has been undeniably an efforts made over the years, including during the civil rights era, to, okay, fine, we acknowledge you, but we really don't care. And I think that that's starting to change. We are realizing, no, you can't have it that way. If you really do care and you really do want equity, that you have to remember their names and know who these people are.
Exactly. And in my opinion, having grown up in Minnesota and knowing the history of the Minneapolis police and, you know, just sort of living here in Minnesota, it didn't surprise me at all that the thing that made this change happened in South Minneapolis rather than South Carolina. It didn't surprise me at all, you know, because we've been trying to tell y'all for 401 years now what's been going on, and nobody paid attention. And, you know, they had to actually see that man's knee on George Floyd's neck for 800 and some minutes and hearing him call out for his mama to believe that what we've been saying. Mm. You know, and have this 17-year-old child who's probably traumatized for the rest of her life, you know, photographing it or video, you know, recording it. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, no surprise here.
Well, and, you know, here you have another case in Milwaukee, in Waukesha.
And it's just never ending. It just never ends.
And what it is that the lies that – and I'll say it bluntly, the lies that the white community has told ourselves to make ourselves feel better that this is going on, we finally cannot believe them anymore, because the reality, the video, the cameras – I mean, I also think that there definitely is a part of this that we have cameras everywhere now. Everyone carries one. And the fact is what the African-American community has been pleading with the other communities that saying this is going on is now finally getting exposed. Going back to your writing, I'd love to hear your thoughts on revisiting youthful writing, because I'll write something and I'll go back and look at it and I'll be like, I was younger. I'm not very happy with how it sounds, because I'm a more mature, I'm a better writer today. But, you know, when you look back on these moments, I mean, obviously you want to respect the emotion and the time that was captured at that moment, but obviously, as you said, you want to bring your modern perspective on that. Talk about that process a little bit, because that's got to be very difficult.
It's fascinating. It was fascinating for me because, you know, I want to remember the stories as much as I could, knowing darn well that it's hard to remember anything that happened 5 minutes ago, you know, let alone 30 some years ago. And so what I do and what I try to tell my students as well is to try to remember, you know, certain aspects of it. For example, my mother had a dress that was pink and gray and white stripes. And I can visualize that dress in my mind and remember something that might have happened, you know, watched her baking an apple pie or something with that dress on. And then that'll trigger another memory. And then, you know, I'll try to remember, you know, my mother. I may not have remembered exactly what she said, but I remember her voice and things that she would have said. You know, to try to recreate a memory is to go back there, you know, and remember what music was were we listening to then. And, oh, yeah, TV. I think TV was sort of becoming color TV then. And, I mean, just things that don't seem to matter that much can trigger really strong, powerful memories and help you to go back to, you know, a time and a space that, you know, that may have been difficult to go to. I'm one of the co-authors of, you know, Dr. Josie Johnson.
I've read that in your bio there. I know of the book.
Yeah, well, she's, I helped her write her book as well. And I found that to work very well with her as well, is that I would ask her a question, like, you know, remember that purple dress you were talking about? And she says, why are you asking me about a purple dress? But then I go back and visit with her the next week, and that question had triggered all kinds of amazing memories. So sometimes the simplest things can, you know, help you to recreate and enlarge a memory. And then again, you know, as I was saying, with like with dialogue, for example, you can't remember exactly what was said, but you know how your parents talked. You know how you and your friends talked with each other. You remember some of the verbiage that, you know, was popular back then. So you can sort of recreate authentic dialogue that's not, how can I say this? You're not lying, but I'm having such a difficult time here trying to express what I'm trying to say here.
You're salient. You're salient. I know exactly what you're getting at, because my 103-year-old grandmother, before she passed away, the dementia had gripped her pretty strong. And even to a point where I was the milkman from the 1950s and she was chewing me out about cheese one time. But my son, I brought my son there, and his name is Charlie, and she had a brother named Charlie who died of scarlet fever when she was very young. He was like 4 when he died. And I would bring my son to her and just to say hi, and she would be like, oh, it's my brother Charlie. It's my brother Charlie. And she'd say, no, that's not my brother Charlie. It's my great-grandson Charlie. Oh, Matt and Gina are here. And it wasn't – we weren't remembering, as you said, it wasn't verbatim. It wasn't, you know, a documentary. But what it was there was an embracing of the memories to a point where things came back and you remembered maybe not the exact – you know, minute details, but you remember the moment. And I think that is key.
Yes. And that's exactly what I'm getting at. Yeah. Exactly. You can walk into your grandmother's house and smell apple pie baking, even though she's not baking apple pie right now. It just triggers that memory, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do want to make sure I mention on Wednesday the 26th at 7 p.m. at Next Chapter Booksellers, Carolyn Holbrook's going to be over there talking about her book, Tell Me Your Names and I Will Testify, Essays, University of Minnesota Press. Carolyn, congratulations on the book. All my best on this. And by all means, anytime you want to come back, you are more than welcome to, okay?
Thank you. Can I just add real quick that the reading tomorrow night will be virtual, and I'm reading with Dakota author Diane Wilson and African-American poet Mary Moore Easter. So, just tune in to Next Chapter Bookstore. You can get all the details and the Zoom link.
Yep, it's nextchapterbooksellers.com. That's nextchapterbooksellers, all written out, .com. Carolyn, thank you very much. I do appreciate the time. Carolyn Holbrook, Tell Me Your Names and I Will Testify. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.